Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Gateway Episodes. This time we are going to be talking about a HBO show, The Leftovers, which ran a couple of years back, starring Justin Theroux, Carrie Coon, Christopher Eccleston, a bunch of other really great character actors created by one of my favorite guys, Damon Lindelof. Joining me today is a really good friend of mine, Leo Coro. How's it going, Leo?
Hey, Derek. It's a good night.
Good. So if we sound a little weird, it's just because I fucked up and forgot to hit record the first time around. So we're starting again here. Hopefully this doesn't affect us too much because we were kind of on a roll. But we'll go ahead and start over again. So this is, you know, the show The Leftovers. We're talking about season one, episode one. This is not something I usually do. I don't usually go into a pilot episode to do the gateway episode to kind of introduce someone to the show, because that is, if you're not familiar with the podcast, this is the first time you're listening, kind of the premise of our show, is that we'll introduce someone to kind of a great or kind of, you know, cult hit TV show by showing them an episode. Either I'll get introduced or I'll introduce someone. But I did choose the first episode of The Leftovers because I feel like with the premise being so kind of like, you really have to know the premise to understand what's going on. There's so many big mysteries and things happening with this show that I feel like, you know, really the only place to start with it is at the start. So with that all being said, Leo, tell me what you thought about the show.
So I enjoyed the pilot episode that I watched. There was so much going on. My first impression was the first scene where this woman is stressed the fuck out, and I was stressed with her. She is doing it's like normal stressful stuff, like laundromat thing. Her baby is crying, you know, like it's normal. And then the thing happens and the baby is gone, and I'm even more stressed the fuck out. Like it is intensity from the very beginning. And I kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Like I like writing with those emotions, especially if like a show is emotionally charged. I like to get invested in that and just kind of go with the ride. And so I was over here stressed the fuck out for the first part of it. And so stress was the first kind of emotion I felt while watching this. Mm-hmm. And then I would say the rest of it was just intrigue. Like I was just like, okay, well, what else? Like, what else can I learn from what is going on? Because there's just so much in this episode. Yeah.
So if anybody listening out there isn't really familiar with the show and its premise, suddenly just one day, 2% of the population just randomly, nobody can really... seems to be no rhyme or reason, just disappears, just vanishes. And in that first scene, this lady has a crying baby, and you just hear it stop crying. All of a sudden, she looks back, and it's just gone. And, you know, the whole show kind of like, and then it jumps forward 3 years, and the show kind of, you know, dives into the psychology of, you know, the world and the people kind of dealing with the fallout of this and, you know, how that would affect people. Were you aware of the premise of the show going into it at all?
I think I was only made aware of it because we had a conversation about the show.
Okay.
Before you would even assign me to watch this. Because I think you were talking about how much you loved Lost, and then mm-hmm. you brought up The Leftovers because it's an easier show to consume.
Yes.
If you're going to just go to it. I remember this specifically. We're like recovering the bookstore, and you were talking about how if I can't get into Lost, I can at least try to get into The Leftovers.
Because they're both so good, and mm-hmm. but Leftovers is much less of a commitment.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what you had said, and then you kind of gave me an idea of like what it was. You basically mm-hmm. said like The Rapture or something. Or I think you referenced Thanos' snap.
If I remember correctly. That makes sense, because, you know, it is, you know, kind of like... just people just kind of like are vanished, but unlike, you know, the snap, there is no kind of There's no reason why. And it is only 2% as opposed to half the world. So that does...
Right.
Life kind of continues on, you know, relatively normally. It's not going to affect anyone, you know, the inner workings of society or anything. But, like, people are so affected by it, you know. And it's interesting to kind of see all that. And like we're saying, because Lost also was created by Damon Lindelof, who... That's why I got so into it, because I think he does... a really good job of kind of like looking at like taking these really big, interesting sci-fi concepts, but really making them about people and their stories. And while Lost is a big show, like, you know, it's 6 seasons and it's 100 whatever episodes, you know, Leftovers is 3 seasons, 28 episodes, about the same length as season one for Lost. And you know, unlike Lost being a network show, which was so like constantly expanding, and the right and you know the high up executives were like, okay, you need to do more and more and more. He was able to just kind of get in and tell his story and be finished, which he also did, you know, when he did his next show, when he did Watchmen, you know, he did that again with HBO, and I think, you know, that is kind of why.
Yeah, and I feel like any artist working with like HBO is more free to do what they want with their content, as opposed to like a network, because the network is always going to think about, you know, ratings and money.
Yeah.
So, you know, with HBO, it's like, at least they have that creative, like that freedom to be as creative as they want. And I think the quality of the show gets to be just so much more of what the, like the creators want, which I think is, I mean, I prefer HBO shows over anything from the networks, though network shows can be good.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, for sure, for sure. But like, you know, also, you know, with show, with stuff on like HBO or Amazon Prime or, you know, whatever it might be, you have a lot more freedom, not just because of network executives, but because, you know, it's not on TV. You can, you know, have explicit things. You can have language and nudity and violence and, you know, all these things that are part of the human condition that, you know, like before we recorded, I was just watching that show Invincible, and I was like, this is a show that could never be on, because it's kind of like The Boys, where it's a superhero show, but it's pretty graphic, even though it's animated, where it could never be on just like regular TV. And, you know, The Leftovers is the same thing, where there's like, you know, sex and cursing and things like that. And, you know, things that, like, interestingly enough, like when they would write the scripts for Lost, they would write like fucking shit and things like that in the script, but they just wouldn't say it in the episode, which I thought was really interesting. But obviously you can say fuck on The Leftovers.
Right. Yeah, no, that, and that it goes back to the freedom like that, that you get from these other platforms, I should say. Whereas, yeah, again, if you're like the networks, it's just like, you got to cater to a more family friendly sort of audience.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So then, Leo, since, you know, you did watch this, and this is, you know, a question that I ask everybody, I'm always a little bit nervous to ask it, but I already know your answer, but I'll ask it again anyway. Did you step through the gateway after watching this episode?
Absolutely. I'm not going to lie. As soon as I finished the pilot, I did start the next episode. I feel like this show is definitely one of those that is bingeable. Once you get past the halfway point of the pilot episode, then things start to roll into like into place, and they start like asking, like the questions start popping up. And as soon as that starts happening, that then my like I start growing invested in the characters. Because I'll admit, I did try to watch this like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. And I only got halfway through and I kind of stopped because you got to have to push through the first 30 minutes. And the only reason I say that is because you're not quite sure if those 30 minutes, who the main characters are, like who you're supposed to care about.
It is a lot just coming at you in the beginning.
Exactly. And so you kind of like when I rewatched the second time, I kind of just like, okay, let's watch this and let's see and let's like remember, because like you said, it's a lot of stuff coming in, a lot of information. But once you get past that and you start into the second half of the episode it just, you know, you can't put it down, because it's like you start finding out different little things about the characters who are like the main family, like Justin Theroux's character. I don't know his name.
Kevin Garvey.
Okay, so Kevin, I know his wife Lori. I don't remember the daughter's name and the son Tommy. I remember Tommy and Lori, the daughter, and them. And yeah, so,
yeah,
you know, it goes into like the, and then you realize, oh, this is who you're supposed to care about. But then there's other characters on the site as well. And once I realized, okay, this is who I care about, then I start, you know, investing in these characters, and that pushes me through to like really want to know what it is that's going on with them. And when it comes to this show, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like the plot twists in this episode alone are crazy. Like, especially with that family.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited to see where their journey goes.
Yeah, because you think, you know, like, oh, like everyone's kind of talking, like his wife left, and, you know, everyone's like, oh, you know, saying to the daughter, like, oh, your mom, blah, blah, blah. And then it turns out she didn't get snapped. She just, you know, happened to be, you know, like, she just joined that cult, the Guilty Remnant. Do you see where Kevin was during the disappearance in this episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I
Holy
thank
shit.
God for that scene.
Fucking A. You're like, whoa, that's gotta, okay, so, because, yeah, well, I'll just say, you know, here, that he's cheating on his wife, and
the person he's
sleeping with disappears, and, like, holy shit, like, fucking A, you know, like, this show, like, it really, you know, it, something Damon Lindelof does so well is he shows kind of, like, broken people dealing with a world that doesn't make sense, and he, you know, did it on Lost, like, just like on Lost, where it's the people end up on the island, they were already broken before they went to the island. The people who, you know, when the disappearance happened, they were every one of these main characters was broken before that. And, you know, once you are introduced to these characters, it's impossible to stop you. Like you said, you know, with the second half, you were so pulled in, and had to kind of go back. And that makes sense. And, you know, something that, you know, he has kind of carried over, you know, he's done this in all his shows. It was kind of like implicit in Lost, where each episode was about a character and you see their flashbacks. And then on this show, there's no flashbacks, but there's still that same structure of each episode is kind of about a character. This is kind of a Kevin episode. And then, you know, you get Lori episodes and, you know, that guy, Matthew, the preacher, you know, you kind of get some, you get him, and you'll get more and more of like these different characters get a spotlight shined on them throughout the show. And with more and more characters constantly introduced. And then it's something he also carried over to Watchmen, where, you know, each episode kind of focus on a singular character. And it is, you know, something that, you know, is an advantage of TV. While it is so serialized, the story, you know, it is broken up in ways that it's almost like chapters in a book, where it's like, okay, like this chapter is about this person, and the next chapter, while it's continuing the story, is told, like the Game of Thrones books, like this chapter is showed from this person's point of view, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of, like the Song of Ice and Fire, the way that's structured.
Which is interesting, because the Game of Thrones show doesn't do that, but...
It does not. It does not. It does its own thing at the end, and that's kind of wild. But with this one, once you get through that second half and you start giving a shit about these characters, that's when it's like, okay, and it becomes a bingeable show, because I kept watching, like, after I finished the first episode and I completely finished it, I was like, okay, then let's get into the next one, because I want to find out what happened with, like you brought up, the wife. You know, Lori is in this like cult where I don't even know what it is exactly that the cult is doing. You know, like, they kind of, the only thing it gives me in this episode is that they don't talk and they're always smoking. And they have like weird little like posters in their break room or whatever. And, you know, it's just, I don't get it. And I want to get it. So that's why I want to continue watching. And then his son is also like in a compound in Nevada. I think that's where he's introduced. And, you know, like, I think the second episode goes into, like, that compound being raided. And I'm curious to see what happened to his son and how he got there. You know, because, yeah, it's like you said, like, you kind of think at the beginning of the episode, it's like, Kevin's family probably disappeared, the wife and the son. And then at the end of the episode, you realize everyone's alive. They're all there. And it's also like you brought up the broken characters. That is definitely a pull. Just seeing these the flawed traits of these people and just how they're going to continue to traverse this chaotic world.
Right, right, yeah. And something it does really well is, you know, everyone has all these questions and they're trying to make sense of anything. And so as the viewer, so are you. So, you know, mm-hmm. you relate so much to all of them and just like, you know, their pain and confusion that it really yeah. just makes you empathize with these people so quickly. Like, and that's what that first scene does such a good job of. And that's why it's so cool that they kind of bookend the episode with that same character who never really comes back at all, but like she just kind of is like, oh yeah, like you see, like she's like, this is where I was, and it really like so does like I said, you know, Damon is so good at taking these kind of sci-fi worlds, you know, mm-hmm. and but like giving us interesting, great characters, because a lot of shows out there that are these kind of like sci-fi shows that try to replicate the success of a show like The Leftovers, and they fail is because they don't understand that you really at the heart of it. It's not like about having a compelling mystery, which is obviously very important. You need that. But what really sets a show apart is having these characters that you want to go on this trip with. And, you know, like, I don't know if you remember that show from like, it was like years back called The Event. And like every episode was like, the event is coming, and no one cared because like, it's, like who cares about this mystery box if like, you know, if everyone is just a cardboard cutout.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't even heard or remember hearing the show you just mentioned. So yeah,
it was bad.
It's just, they just fall by the wayside because, yeah, no, I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying. It's like character development is important if you want to mm-hmm. keep your audience engaged, I mm-hmm. think, and especially with like sci-fi, because a lot of people are turned off by the genre. Mm-hmm. At least a lot of people in like that are more like mainstream, just kind of like casual watchers of things. They get really turned off, and it's not just sci-fi. Like, think about like even like fantasy, you know. And like there's been successful fantasy shows because of character development, you know.
Yeah.
I would say, and we're referencing Game of Thrones again, at least I am in this case, where it's just mm-hmm. like the big draw to that show was the fact that some of these characters were just incredibly good.
Yeah, like you care about like Ned and the other Starks and, you know, what's exactly. going on with like Daenerys and like all these characters. And I think the reason it starts, the people don't like the ending is because the characters start behaving in ways that don't feel like they make sense, and they just kind of do mm-hmm. things. It's like, why are you insane now all of a sudden?
Yeah.
You know, and that's really it. It wasn't, you know, that the plot wasn't, you know, like it might have been partially like they didn't agree with the plot, but it was really just like the characters were just kind of all over the board. And I think it's interesting because Game of Thrones kind of goes off the rails once they don't really have the books to adapt anymore. Whereas I feel mm-hmm. like Lindelof is one of the few creators who is really, because I usually don't like this, where after like, you know, it's kind of like, okay, what was happening after this adaptation ended? Mm-hmm. And he actually gets stronger at like, because Watchmen is an adaptation of like the present day based on what happened. It's like a sequel series almost to the graphic novels. It's like, what's happening now? And it has nothing to do with like After Watchmen or any of the other graphic novel series, but it's a direct sequel to the original graphic novel. And mm-hmm. like this, season one is really good, but then it really, which because it's a direct adaptation of Tom Perrotta's novel, who is also a co-writer and creator of the show along with Lindelof. But it really, really picks up in seasons two and three when Lindelof can kind of just like do whatever he wants and like make all these interesting choices and kind of, you know, do his own thing and not have to be like confined by adapting something beat for beat.
See, and now you've made another case for me to step through the gateway. Because if you're saying it gets better after the first season, and the first season, like, again, even just these first two episodes are already really good. Mm-hmm. With all the intrigue, which is very important in a show, I think. And just, like, all the questions and everything. It's just, like, the fact that it gets better after it leaves its adaptation, it's like you said, it's complete opposite of like Game of Thrones. I would agree with you 100%. It starts getting weaker after it has no more source material to go off of. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this case, you say, because I haven't gotten there yet, that it gets better. So I'm excited to get there.
Yeah, and there's really not a lot of stuff that I feel like does that, you know, other than mm-hmm. you know, The Leftovers. That's why I was like, you know, pretty nervous about it going into season two, but it actually it feels like it can breathe a lot more. It's still obviously very serious, and there's sad retrospective, you know, moments from everybody dealing with like really depressive issues, but it feels a lot less overwhelmingly gloomy in seasons two and three.
Yeah.
I think is the big difference. Because it is a little bit like, especially like with that theme song, that it's just like, you know, this theme song is kind of like, you know, like the world is like bearing down on everyone with this, like, you know, art, then there's like this epic music is playing.
Yes.
And yes. It's a little much.
No, you know what though? I actually liked that.
I like it. It's just, I think that the way, I won't say what they do with, but like the way it kind of, they handle it in season two and three, the theme song, I do prefer.
Okay. See, now that makes me even like more excited, because it's like, if you're saying it's so much better and I'm already kind of really into the first season, I feel like I'll probably end up binge watching this by next week. It's awesome. Like you said, it's like 28 episodes.
28 episodes, yeah.
And that's not hard to do. If I can rewatch fucking Real Housewives of Beverly Hills again, I can totally do this and give my Real Housewives a break.
I'm really glad to hear that you're enjoying it and you gave it a shot, Leo. This is a show that is really important to me and means a lot to me. You know, I love all mm-hmm. of it. I did say season two and three are better, but season one is still great. It's still incredible. Like, you know, but yeah, just it's something, you know. I had, as soon as I was watching it, like kind of remind myself, I hadn't seen it since, you know, I first watched it a couple of years back. And because I had been meaning to watch it for a really long time because I love Lindelof so much. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have access to HBO. And as soon as I got access to HBO, I was like, okay, cool, I'm going to watch this right away. And then once I got HBO Max, and then, you know, I watched it, now I have HBO Max. And I watched the first episode and I was like, fuck, that's so good. I just had to keep, you know, it did the same thing to me. It pulled me in. I was like, gotta go episode two, episode three. And so I am, you know, doing a rewatch of it now. Because it's so engaging, and it is a very unique show. And for giving it a shot. And I'm glad you really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The rapture, and look, like, I'm not a religious guy, but mm-hmm. the mythology of all of it is kind of interesting, you know, like religion and their myths, they're it's mm-hmm. still fun. And this one is one that, you know, like, even just seeing the political ramifications in the show mm-hmm. of what this event has created, because like you said, it's only 2% of the population, so society doesn't cease to exist or anything. And so you hear in the little, and like I think I mentioned this when before we recorded, that one of my favorite parts of this episode was overhearing the little like newscast reports of the event and everything, like in retrospect, because it's always like, because it's 3 years after it happened, and you just hear them just talk about this whole like thing and the different perspectives, the different sides of the aisle. Like you see the religious folk and the non-religious folk trying to discuss this, and how hard it is for the two camps to like agree on anything, because one is going to say, oh, this is God's will, and the other one's trying to find out what like science has to say about this.
Right.
And it's really just like this anomaly, like nobody gets it.
And it's a really interesting, because that is the theme the show kind of continually runs with. And one of the things I think is really interesting is that, you know, that was actually kind of like a recurring thing that, you know, Lindelof brought up. There was a whole phrase, man of science versus man of faith, that was this interesting character dichotomy in Lost that was like one of the core things. And, you know, that does obviously, like you were just implying, come back into this show. And I think that's something that Lindelof is very interested in, where he is interested in this kind of dichotomy between science and faith. And, you know, he is somebody who, like, he does seem very, very interested in, like, religion and, like, those mythologies and everything, but, like, not necessarily in a super positive way, but not necessarily, like, also a really negative way. He's just kind of like, you know, it is kind of like, I think it's, you know, his father, you know, he's got all his stuff with father issues, and that kind of extends to, like, the big sky father, you know, at the same time. And, like, God is just kind of this dick up there. Like it's kind of like the way he kind of presents some things, but it's interesting because the character that is the most religious, like you get a glimpse of him for a second, but he's kind of like in the pilot episode, Matt, who is a preacher, is going around handing out these pamphlets saying this was not the rapture, this person who disappeared was cheating on his wife, he was doing all this stuff, like, and he's getting the shit beat out of him by people. But like, so that I think is really, really interesting.
No, I agree with you. I didn't know if you were going to bring him up or not, but yes, I 100%. I remember when I was watching this and I was like, oh, this guy is over here, like, knocking these people down, like, like the memory of them. It's just like, it's funny because it's like dark humor, because it's just like, oh, he's over here. I think it was when they were unveiling like the hero sculpture. The cop was like, I mean, Kevin, he was like, really, you got to do this today? And he was just like, God, I forgot what he said.
He said something like along like lines of like, of all days, yeah, today, of course, today.
Yeah, that's what he said. And I was just like, oh, God, this guy's either too woke or or I don't know, but I like it. Like, I like it. And so I'm very curious to see him in the next episodes.
Yeah, it's almost like he draws a lot, I feel like, with partially from Matthew, but also kind of with Carrie Coon, with her having lost all three. There's a lot of Book of Job stuff in this. Like, I think that is, you know, a story that kind of really interests Damon Lindelof, like, because, you know, like I was saying before, that, like, you know, like God is just kind of like up there just doing all this stuff, and like, you know, Matthew. And does kind of like, who's the character played by Chris Eccleston, the Doctor Who guy, he does kind of feel like a very Job kind of character, like this, you know, and him and Carrie Coon, who both only get moments in this, but, you know, I will give a minor spoiler and say they're both very, very important characters going forward.
Okay.
Maybe the probably like two of the like four most important characters, I will say, at least in season one. But like they kind of become more important and interesting. You get a lot more of their life, and kind of like, you know, they are these kind of Job like figures where they've lost everything, and they've kind of been abandoned by God, like almost they feel like, and just, you know, and Matt kind of consistently has his faith tested, and he's this man of God, and it's like, does he ever give up? And, you know, there's other, like, it is not just them two, but like stuff with Kevin where it's like things he goes through. It does feel like he's like kind of being tested by this higher power, and it, you know, is like the show probably, I'll just say, you know, it doesn't really seem like it's going to set up like the answers for that. It's not going to be like one day it's going to be like, and this was the rapture, or it was this. Like, it's, it's kind of clear from the beginning, like, this is a show where, you know, like, it's just, there are these, just, for, like, you don't really, you're confused. And it that's not to say that, like, it doesn't, like, everything is a mystery and, like, nothing's answered, but, like, the characters and, like, what they say is a lot more interesting and important. And they might give hints of, like, this might have been this, but it's never, anything's ever confirmed. Everything is still kind of, like, mysterious, and, like, you could have your own theories and explanations, and I really find that fascinating.
Oh, yeah. It's like you said earlier, I think, it keeps you engaged, and that's a lot of it, I think. But yeah, no, I'm very excited to continue watching it.
It is
definitely a show that I can see myself binging again in the future, just so that I can pick up the things that I missed the first time around.
Yeah, and there is stuff like you know, we were saying, like, there was that scene where they're watching the TV, and, you know, you see, it's like the guy's like, I get the Pope, but Gary Busey, you know,
yeah,
like there's stuff where I was like, someone they mentioned having, like, disappeared, like, or there's something someone says in that scene, and you're like, that is, like, a major thing in season three, and you're like, what the fuck, like did they plan that, like what, you know, like, there is, because there's stuff like going back and rewatching it, having seen the whole show, you're like, fuck, that trips me out, you know.
Okay, see, and that's exciting to know that is something to look forward to, the fact that you can rewatch it a second time or how many other times and still pick up on these little things. I think that's really something that makes the show really good, is kind of going back to it and just connecting dots and being like, oh, and the fact that it's only 28 episodes makes it so easy to do that.
It's very bingeable, very doable. It's not a huge commitment. You know, like, I keep thinking I'm going to get into Mad Men, but I'm always just like, there's so much Mad Men.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's a commitment.
Yeah. But yeah, unless you had any final thoughts on anything on Leftovers, Leo?
Not really. I just want to get back to it so I can find out what's going on. Cause like I said, like I watched it, like, I watched the first episode today before my shift. I got into the second episode and then I had to go to work. So I'm still just kind of like, okay, and then what's going to happen next? So my thoughts are that I still need to continue watching it so I can develop more thoughts, because it's definitely a show that, like, sets everything up at the beginning and just keeps you guessing, which I fucking love.
And yeah, that's why, you know, I did choose this episode, because I think this is a perfect pilot. Like, you know, like I said before, this is the first time I've done a pilot as a gateway episode. Usually I'll choose, you know, like with Justified, I did an episode from season four that was just kind of a really good, you know, interaction between a couple characters. But this sets everything up so beautifully. Like, originally I was thinking about a different episode, and I was like, okay, this is a really good, like, character episode, and there's a lot going on, but if you don't really know these characters, you don't really understand a lot of their deeper motivations. Whereas this, it's like, boom, here's these people, and you instantly are drawn to them. And it's one of the best pilots I think I've ever seen, like, in any show.
It's definitely a good one, because pilot episodes can be so draining sometimes.
yeah
and like I said, like I admitted earlier, I did try to watch it at first, like 3 weeks ago, and I kind of stopped halfway through, but then when I pushed myself to just hang on just a little bit longer, then I was like, okay, yeah, no, this is fucking good. Like, because you start getting into the characters, especially the family, the Garveys.
Garveys. Yeah, you're right.
Garveys. Yeah. So you get into them and you start realizing, like, their whole story is a fucking story. And you kind of get that from the first episode. And so you're just like, okay, what's going on? I need to know more. That's where I am right now. I mean, I think the last thing I saw was the daughter, like, saw the lady, Nora, with a gun. And I'm just like, what's that about? So, my final thought is that I can't wait to get back to watching the rest of it.
Awesome. That's so great to hear. I'm really glad you liked it. Well, thank you for coming on and talking about this with me, Leo.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is your first podcast, right?
This is my first recording anything. So yeah, okay. I'm just.
Well, I'm
thanks
really
for
glad
the ride.
Yeah, I was like, well, you know, I was like, you know, Leo's always got a lot of interesting things to say. Let me get his thoughts on The Leftovers, because I knew you would have a lot of good feedback. So I'm really glad. I don't know. So I guess, yeah, this is where I ask if people want to pitch anything, but I guess if this is your first thing, I'll skip over that.
Okay.
Unless there is something you wanted to pitch.
What do you mean? Like,
I don't know. Like, sometimes I'll have people on who are on, you know, podcasts and stuff, and they'll say, follow my podcast.
Yeah, no, follow my Instagram at token10or92. I never post anything, so it's really not worth it. But if you want, there I am.
You've always got good stories, though. I will say I watch all of your stories on Instagram.
Hey, I appreciate that. It goes from political to horny, so that's my range.
Sometimes both.
Sometimes it's politically horny, you know?
That's my vibe.
I'm glad there's an audience for it.
and then you know, if you guys listening, you know, after you follow Leo, you know, check out my other podcast, Underrated. We talk about underrated movies. You know, if you've liked what you've heard here from me, we, you know, every 2 weeks we talk about a new movie. You know, check out on our Instagram, Undercast Company, you know, on all the social medias, or email if you have any thoughts. Any suggestions for shows that I should do for Gateway episode, just email at us at undercastco@gmail.com. But that's all my pitches for the day. But thanks again, Leo. This was so much fun.
Thank you, Derek. I had a blast.
All right, bye, everybody.